Well, our government seems to be changing its farm lending policy. Whereas before, farmers who needed money could get money and the government would guarantee the loans. But today, in the future, it appears to be that only those farmers who do not need money will get the money. But wait, the government policy leads us to ask, if farmers can't get money, will we get food?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 649th edition of the Food Chain right here on News Talk Radio. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends way up there in Aberdeen who are tuned in as we stream along on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio, with engineer Nikki James on the boards. Hello, Nikki.
Hello.
Producer Carol Stafford on the phones today.
Hello.
And Parmley Taff is out today, but we are here. Folks, farmers or commercial growers, as they are many prefer to be called, are in the business of assembling all the required elements of growth, the land, labor, seeds, and water, for the purpose of growing crops for profit. Oh, did I neglect to mention money? Money is the one element that brings all the other elements together. No money, no land, labor, seeds, or water. At one time, perhaps way back there at the beginning of time, farmers would save the profit from one year's harvest to purchase the elements for next year's harvest. And furthermore, they would save some of the profits from the good years in order to get by in the bad years. But that was yesterday, and yesterday it appears, at least, appears to be just about gone. Today, farmers borrow money from commercial lenders each year to buy the essential elements of growth, and they've had a lot of help from Uncle Sam. You see, farming is a risk-filled business, and things don't always go right. Commercial lending institutions are loath to loan on such risky grounds, and so the loans to farmers have been guaranteed by the government. But now the government appears to be changing its policy with respect to lending money to farmers. Now, it appears, only those farmers who do not need the money will get the money. This change of policy leads us to ask, if farmers can't get the money, will we get the food? Here to help us dig around for an answer, we have Dr. Pete Graff, who is a ag lending specialist, a financial expert, and a previous guest. Welcome back to the Food Chain, Dr. Pete.
Glad to be here.
So, 200... Well, wait a minute. We have a guest here you brought with us. Her name is Ciara, and she is from...
Guadalajara, Mexico.
Guadalajara, Mexico. Mm-hmm. Welcome to the Food Chain. And what are you doing in the United States, Ciara?
Well, basically, I'm making my internship here at CalCoastal, which is the lending
institution.
And also ALBA, Land-Based Training Association.
Good. And you're a graduate of the University of Guadalajara?
Yeah, in biology.
In biology?
Yeah.
And you're interested in organic agriculture?
Yes, I'm here to learn.
Well, welcome to the United States, and you have a great teacher in Dr. Pete Graff, and I'm sure that all of us will have a great teacher in Dr. Pete Graff today, so... feel free, Ciara, to jump in whenever you feel like it, because it would be wonderful to have your voice on the air.
Thank you.
Dr. Pete, it's been 210 Saturdays since you last appeared on the Food Chain, and when we last gathered together, we talked about NAFTA and the free markets and the impact that would have on agriculture. So in the past 210 Saturdays, have you seen any changes in the world?
Have I seen any changes in the world? Yes, I saw some when I went to Europe, and I watched their agricultural changes that they're doing, and I wonder why we aren't doing some of the same things here.
Now, what is Europe doing that we're not doing?
Well, we're really not paying attention to what we ought to be doing with the farmers in this country, in my mind. I think that, the need for continued farming in California is very important to the state, and somehow people have forgotten we're an agricultural state.
Not only are we an agricultural state, but according to Michael Olson's first law of the Food Chain, agriculture is the foundation upon which we build all our sandcastles. And if you look around, We built a lot of sandcastles here in California, but we seem to have forgotten that the foundation of all those sandcastles is agriculture.
That's very true. A good example is where we're sending our water that the farmer used to get for his crops.
Yep. So what is Europe doing, Dr. Pete?
Well, Europe seems to specialize in keeping their agriculture active.
Mm-hmm.
Their priority is high with their farming interests. I had a lot of opportunity to see the people at Rabobank in Holland, as an example.
The world's largest ag lending bank.
Yes, that's true.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't loan money just on a yearly basis. They look at a 10-year plan with the farmer, so he knows what's going to happen and he can plan for the future. We loan money on a crop and then take a look at it a year later.
So we're year to year and month to month, short-term thinking here. Now, Japan, I know, is really protective of its agriculture as well, aren't they?
Yes, they are. They very definitely are.
So it seems to be like almost that any country in the world that has good agriculture...
protects it.
Protects
Absolutely.
Their agriculture.
Except for us.
Except for us.
Sure. Look at the west side of California right now and see what's happening with all that land that's idle because they don't have water.
And they don't have water because?
Because we're protecting our fish in the delta, mm-hmm. and we're putting water into our home developments that are going all over the state.
Well, you know, I guess it kind of parallels what I'd like to talk about today, which is ag lending and how we finance the growth of our crops from year to year as opposed to decade to decade like they do elsewhere. When I grew up there in Montana on my grandparents' farm, there were no ag loans. Grandfather financed his farm by, you know, taking the money he made one year to buy the inputs for next year, and then he always tried to set a little aside for when times were going to be tough because times are always tough. But we don't do that anymore, do we?
Well, we don't do it anymore because most of the families don't stay in the land in the first place. You had family-run farms. You don't have that anymore.
So what's the difference then?
The difference is you've got to pay for your labor.
Because you're not doing the labor yourself, right?
Your family isn't doing it. So you and the type of agriculture has changed. What you were doing in Montana was, my guess is, I don't know, but I'm guessing, knowing Montana, that you were doing something with livestock and maybe some hay.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe a little bit of grain.
A lot of beans, too. We were doing some row crops. And
What kind of beans?
Heck if I know. As a kid, you know, they were just darn beans. They were things I hoed all my life, you know.
Okay. Well, they weren't green beans like we grow here.
No.
No, you're talking about dry beans.
Dry beans,
yeah. A harvester can take care of it.
Yeah, they have harvesters, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was a very diversified operation. I think the real crop on those farms is really not plants, but people. You know, the farms were really designed to raise people up, and that's what they did then. And it's a lot different now. So we can't self-finance ourselves anymore when we no longer are on the land or even own the land. Most farmers don't own the land, do they?
No, that's right. Most farmers lease land. I'll give you an example of this area because we're sitting here in the Central Coast. And we're very heavy with berries,
mm-hmm.
strawberries and bushberries, meaning raspberries and olaliberries and so on. And to finance an acre of berries, we're talking a lot of money. An acre of strawberries costs you $8,500 before you harvest a berry.
Wow.
If you've got 50 acres of berries, that's a lot of money.
So that is a lot of money. So we're there you go.
And that money, of course, a lot of it come from a lending institution.
So across America, in other states, for example, like in Kansas or Montana, or a lot of ranchers still own their own land. And they have equity then to borrow against, correct?
Yes.
Now, what about if you don't have the equity, if you're a... Is that what we're talking about? If you don't have equity,
you don't have equity. You have a crop.
They have a crop,
and you have some equity in your equipment,
mm-hmm.
and and some equity, hopefully, in some of the land or your home that you have. But, you know, look what's happened in the last couple of years. Equity in property has gone down. So you don't have the availability of money from the equity in your land.
So the money's tougher, too, then.
Money's tougher there.
Huh. So in looking back, I guess if you're not on the land, if you're not living on the land, if you're not making your living from that land, then you're really, you know, kind of, I think of it as being a building contractor. You know, somebody has a contractor's license to build buildings. That person is likely not out hammering nails, right?
Right.
He's hiring other people to do all of these parts. He's hiring somebody to dig the foundation. He's hiring somebody to pour the cement for the foundation. He's hiring somebody to put the floor in and then frame it. Hiring somebody to put the sheetrock up.
In all phases, somebody gets hired.
Also,
unless you're a small general contractor who has all those talents. Not very many people have all those talents.
Okay.
But let's take a look at that strawberry farmer. He's got how many people to pick those strawberries?
Yeah, hold that thought for just a minute. Folks, you're tuned into the Food Chain Radio program. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio. Today we're talking about money, government money, and the change in the government loan programs to agriculture. And, of course, this has nothing to do with you unless you happen to eat food. If you happen to eat food, you got to be concerned about where your food's coming from or if it's going to come from there anymore. And if farmers don't get their money, will we get our food? Stay tuned. We have Dr. Pete Graff here with us, and we have Ciara from Guadalajara. And you, 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Right back.
Get this. The average acre of farmland in or near the city limits may earn in excess of $123,000 per year. To learn how so much can be earned from so little, pick up a copy of MetroFarm, the guide to growing for big profit on a small parcel of land. MetroFarm is the PMA Ben Franklin Book of the Year Award winner by Michael Olson that contains over 500 pages of photos, charts, checklists, illustrations, and in-depth interviews. MetroFarm will teach you how to develop a strategy, survey markets, select crops, organize business, establish production, prepare for market, and make the sale. MetroFarm will teach you how others just like you earn a good living by growing high-value specialty crops for people who are truly appreciative. Abraham Lincoln said, "The greatest fine art of the future will be the making of a comfortable living from a small parcel of land." Get in on that future today. Pick up a copy of MetroFarm at bookstores, lawn and garden supply stores, 1-800-624-BOOK, or at www.metrofarm.com.
Welcome back. This is the Food Chain Radio program. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio. What's Eating What today is money, of course, which is always eating everything up. And we're talking about the changes, fundamental changes in government lending policies to agriculture. And we're asking the question, if farmers can't get money, will we get food? And if you have questions with respect to money in agriculture, pick up your phone and join us, because we have Dr. Pete Graff, who knows a lot about it because he's been doing it for a long time, lending money. I believe he sits on a lending committee at a bank, commercial lending institution, and he also works with international finance, and he does a lot of work with agriculture around the world. And I know he's done a lot of work with Mexico and in Mexico. And as a matter of fact, he brought an intern back from Mexico. Her name is Ciara, and she is from Guadalajara.
Yes, Ciara? Right.
Okay. Pull that microphone right up, yes.
Okay.
Now say hello to everybody.
Okay. Hi, everybody.
There you go. Very good. In Guadalajara, do you have farms around the city?
Yeah, we have some farms, but we are having troubles because the city is getting too big. So the land that was available for farming is getting, you know, mm-hmm. Houses are being constructed.
Same thing that's happening here in the United States, then.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
So can we protect our agricultural lands and still allow for the growth of cities? That's an. Are they doing that in Europe, Dr. Pete?
Absolutely. Yes, they don't develop farmland in Europe. They put a second story on the house that was a one story if they need to expand. Mm-hmm. They have put zones where they hold their farmland. Their farmers are very well protected, and you know, they put their emphasis on having their own food.
Well, it seems like we've been at war with agriculture here in California. The people raise up in arms whenever a farmer plows the field and dust floats in the air, and so we go after farmers, and essentially we've been chasing them away. And the last time you were on the Food Chain, 210 Saturdays ago, I guess it was, we talked a little bit about what will happen with the new world order of open borders. So what has happened to agriculture with respect to the agriculture here in California and Mexico?
Well, agriculture in Mexico is growing. Diversified agriculture is growing in Mexico. Sure, it's growing. I mean, the city of Guadalajara is getting bigger and they're losing land, but there's other land that's being developed, and they are becoming more intense farmers. Mexicans used to grow corn on the side of the hills and so on. If you ever have a chance, go from Nogales to Mazatlan and see what you see as you go through very intense farming operations down there. Good example is that we used to have a very large tomato grower in King City, and things got tough up here for labor, for many other things, and so he moved to the area of Sinaloa and Sonora, the two states in Mexico, and that's where you're getting a lot of your fresh tomatoes now.
And coming from Mexico,
Coming from Mexico,
because
yes.
It's a lot easier to grow there than it is here.
Well, the labor is more available, the water is more available, and the climate to help agriculture is much better than it is here.
So do you see any change in this direction?
I am worried about what may happen when the farmers find out how tough financing has just gotten overnight here. And there's a lot of them that may be moving south. Many of your farmers in California are Mexican-American farmers.
Mm-hmm.
And that means they have ties in Mexico. And I'm talking about your middle-sized farmers now.
Sure.
And the possibility is that some of them may look south.
Because it's easier?
Because it's easier.
And we can make more money. So let's talk a little bit about the way government used to back agriculture with funding. How did it used to be before the very recent change that you're talking about?
Well, you know, we've been through a lot of budget problems in the state of California, so I'm going to talk locally.
Is that the understatement of the universe or what?
I want to talk locally as far as Central Coast farming is concerned, because that's what I'm very familiar with. We had money that was available from our state government that was there to back up guarantees for farm loans. That money is no longer available. So the guarantee for the farm loans in this area has disappeared. And that means that the tightening of lending has gotten tremendous in this area. And it is definitely going to affect the Central Coast. And I'm worried about the fact that these farmers don't get money. It may mean that it's going to be harder for them to pay back their loans that they had. They may not pay them back. They maybe put that money into the crops they need for this coming year. But 2 or 3 years down the road, they're going to look for alternatives to get the heck out of here. And we need to prioritize ourselves and start helping the farmer again.
So traditionally, the government helped farmers by guaranteeing their loans. And, of course, agriculture is a risky business. Farmers are, I guess, the ultimate gamblers. You know, they put their money down and bet against Mother Nature. And if they win, they win. If they lose, they lose. So if you're a commercial lender, you would look at this situation and say, well, I'm not going to loan on something so risky unless there's a government loan in the back or government guarantee of some kind. And now there isn't any government guarantee, at least here in California.
That's right.
So you're on a lending committee at a commercial lending institution. What do you do on the lending committee? What is your job?
Well, what we do is we scrutinize the request that the farmer brings in for money, And what's very interesting is that we had less than a 1% loan loss with the farmers we dealt with. So, you know, the risk is not as big as you think if you control and help the farmer do a good job in raising his crops. The problem is when the bank loans money, he doesn't have anybody out there helping him that much, especially the small farmer. So they're not interested in loaning money. They want to put money into businesses.
So were you part of this? Oh, we've got a caller. We'll have to pick him up after this break here. We're going to be going into a break in just a moment. But are, as a loan officer, as a, on a loan committee, are you part of the mitigating process of preventing losses then? Is that your job, really?
Actually, our organization has an agronomist, entomologist that provides service directly to the people that borrow money from us. So we have a pretty tight control on what that farmer does with his crop. We also, when he's repaying his loan, as the money comes in, it comes to the bank, and then they distribute it out for things like labor and so on. So there's a tight control on the farmer. So it's probably a better run loan operation than you have with most small businesses.
Huh. Okay, folks, you're tuning into The Food Chain. Michael Olson here. We're talking about government money. Can government get protect agriculture with its loan procedures and policies? It has in the past. Will it do so in the future? This, of course, has nothing to do with those of you out there who don't eat food. You're excused to go someplace else today, but if you eat food, you should give this a thought. Will farmers get the money they need to grow our crops? And if they don't, how will we get the food we need to survive and prosper? 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Right back with the phones, so join us. So, follow the money, but what if there isn't any money to follow? What do you follow then? That's what we're looking at here in California, at least. We have no money, and we have no money to protect our agriculture with. So, if farmers can't get money to farm, will we get money for food? What do you think? 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. We're with Pete Graff, who is a ag lending specialist, a financier, and Ciara, who is Ciara from Guadalajara.
Yeah, hi.
And you, 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. We're going to go to the phones quickly, but before we do, what is the new lending policy? If the government is not going to guarantee loans, how are farmers going to get money?
That's a very good question. We are working very hard to try to solve that problem, but we are still operating, but on a much more limited basis. And what I need to make sure these farmers do is make sure that they have a very good business plan and a good plan of operation when they come in to talk to anybody, because money is very tight right now.
Nothing to play around with right now. So in the past, the government would guarantee the loans, but today, no, the government is not going to guarantee the loans. So when you go to a commercial lending institution and ask for a loan, you have to have a good business plan, and the banker's got to sit there and look you in the eye and say, are you going to pay me back? Because if you don't pay me back, I'm going to lose my money.
No, yeah, that's exactly right.
Well, let's go to the phones and talk with Jim. Jim, welcome to The Food Chain. You've got Dr. Pete Graff, you have Ciara, and Michael Olson. Go ahead.
Hey, great. Thanks for taking my call. Last week I drove in southern Monterey County on Highway 198 over to Coalinga and then to Visalia. And there were, miles of corn and some cotton, too. But there were also miles and miles of dead cornfields with shriveling on the stalk there, and barren lands. I mean, miles of it. Some of them had the sign posted at it, Congress Created Dust Bowl. And I didn't know if that had something to do with water dispute or banking or anything. I'm wondering if you have any ideas on that.
Well, I think it's a judge created Dust Bowl. Dr. Pete, what's going on?
Well, that's a water problem right now. The farmers down there were on a federal water program, and they cut that water off. So that's the big problem. Maybe you drove through San Benito County also, where we have what's called the Blue Valve. The Blue Valve is water that comes out of the San Luis Reservoir, and they have been cut by 60% of their water. So if you're farming 100 acres over there, that leaves you 40 acres that you can farm.
Well, but there were some very productive fields, and then there would be a space of a square mile or two of just absolutely fallow land, a dust bowl. So I'm wondering, you know, how could one get some and one not?
Well, that's what happened. They cut the percentage of water, and if you were farming, as I said, if you were farming 100 acres, and they took 60% of your water away, then you're going to do a decent job on 40 acres and leave 60 acres idle.
I see.
Let me ask you this, Jim.
Yeah.
if we're down to 40% of our food, is it going to be enough?
No.
Well, our population isn't going down, so figure that out. I guess that's why they're moving south and other places.
How much money are we losing by taking that land out of production, Pete? Do you have any idea?
Oh, lots of money.
In a state that's
And jobs. Don't forget that. You know, everybody's talking about the fact they're closing the NUMMI plant and losing 4,700 people. What do you think's going to happen when we quit growing some of the crops we're growing and some of our productive land?
We're talking tens of thousands.
That's right.
Well, I have another question for you.
Go ahead.
I heard about a month or so ago that the federal government claimed that all water within the United States is now federal property. I don't know if that's a rumor or a fact. Have you heard anything about that?
Well, I don't know, but I heard they're taking over the Internet. Pete?
Well, I'm not sure that all water is federal, but I do know one thing. If you have a well in Santa Cruz County, you are now paying in Watsonville. We have to pay to the water board so much every year.
Well, you know, that question, Jim, is not altogether out of bounds. I had an email response to our press release regarding this show, and the respondent said that what this means, this change of ag lending policy, is that the government will now have the ability to control farmers just like it has the ability to control the banking industry and the auto industry.
Yeah, and that kind of sounds scary to me. You know, I know that water is a precious resource.
Well, water and money.
And money, too. But the control of it, and which, of course, you know, there are other water companies in trouble, like Cal-Am and the Carmel Valley River Aquifer, and you know, the rates, we've already been notified, they're going way up, as is the tax on that rate.
a double thrill, right? A double thrill.
We are in between a rock and a hard place, and particularly the farmers.
Okay, so if we put it to the farmers in favor of the fish, and we take 40% of our, no, we take 60% of our land out of production, as is happening in one county.
In certain areas.
In certain areas.
Yeah.
How are things going to get better?
I don't foresee that they will, because, we not only consume an awful lot of the crop, but we ship it and sell it, and that's a reduction in income to the state and farmers as well.
That's it. That's exactly the problem that we're looking at. You know, what's interesting, you talk about the government all of a sudden saying they own the water. What I've always wondered is, why don't they own the oil?
Well, then we'd have to drill for it. That's why.
There you go. Well, Jim, thank you for your call. Really appreciate it.
Yeah.
All right, let's go quickly to Marshall. Marshall, welcome to the Food Chain. You got Dr. Pete Graff, Theata, and Michael Olson.
Your show might be the most important show on the planet.
Wow, that's important. Thank you.
For now, food is so extremely abundant that you cannot give it away to poor people. I have two questions for the doc. How long until printing money puts us out of the food business?
Ooh.
And
we're going to have to take a quick break. Can you hold on? That's an incredible question. So you hold on until after the break?
No problem.
Okay, good. Thank you, Marshall. Folks, this is The Food Chain. Michael Olson here with Dr. Pete Graff, Ciara from Guadalajara. And Michael Olson, today we're talking about money. Will we have enough money to grow the crops? The government appears to be backing away from its ability to fund guaranteed loans for agriculture. So agriculture is going to have to borrow money on its own ability. And will it have the ability to borrow money? And if it can't borrow money, will we get the food we need to survive and prosper? Big questions for all of us who eat food. What do you think? 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. This is The Food Chain, right back. Do stay tuned. Will we have enough money to grow enough food? What do you think? 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Here in California, at least, our state is broke. Not just a little broke, but real broke. And so it can no longer guarantee the loans it was making to farmers. And if it can't guarantee the loans to farmers, that means farmers have to go into a bank without Uncle Sam behind their shoulders, and they have to look that banker right in the eye.
Uncle Arnold.
And they have to say, I can do it. And the banker looks in them in the eye and say, well, can you or can't you? I have to make this bet. So that makes money more expensive, doesn't it, Dr. Pete? When if the government is not able to guarantee a loan, doesn't that make money more expensive?
Oh, no, tighter. It's tighter.
Tighter. Harder to get?
Harder to get.
Same thing. Well, we had a great question from Marshall, so we're going to go back to Marshall and pick this up. And we're talking about money and, of course, the government's proclivity for printing money. So, Marshall, what does the government's proclivity for printing money have to do with food?
You know what? I came up with something while I was off air. Is why is everybody up in arms about health care? When if the government takes over your food, what's going to happen? And my second question, excuse me for changing the subject, but how long until everything falls to hell if nobody has food?
Yeah, well, that's the subject of the day. So what do you think? Let me ask you, what do you think?
I think everything is turning socialist. And they've already taken over the farms, and they've already taken over the medicine. God, yeah, they'll feed you medicine. Thank God for Doc Wallach; he's a cool dude. I don't know. I'm gonna get you all over the place because it all pisses me off.
Well, you hang in there, and things will get better, I'm sure. Well, he asked an interesting question that I'd like to follow up, Dr. Pete. How does the government's printing of money impact the availability of money? Because that's, you know, when you're in debt.
How do you feel about the fact that within the next 10 years, they're telling us that our national debt's going to be $9 trillion?
It doesn't mean anything to me because I don't even know what a
You're not going to be here in 9 years? Is that what you're trying to say?
Yeah, but I have no comprehension of what $1 trillion is.
Well, it's tremendous. I mean, it's...
Essentially, what Marshall is right. We're printing money.
We're printing money. Of course, that's a question a lot of people have asked. Where's the stimulus money when it comes to helping some of the agricultural problems?
Well, let's go to Tom, who has a question. Tom, welcome to The Food Chain. You have Dr. Pete, Ciara, and Michael Olson. Go ahead.
Yeah, I guess my question would be, in terms of this farm financing, is there any commodity in the Central Coast that you guys would be financing that isn't in a situation where supply exceeds demand to begin with? In other words, well, what's the point? I mean, we're so overproduced. Why are growers having to borrow money, so much money?
So you say,
isn't it because they aren't making enough profit margin to accumulate their own working capital because stuff is overproduced to begin with?
Oh, that's what I'm wondering about. So what you're saying is that we have too many farmers producing too much crops, and no farmers making enough money to accumulate enough money to go through the next year.
Yeah, you don't accumulate enough working capital, so you're forced to borrow it. And then by definition, if you're not able to borrow the commercial bank, that tells you you're high risk right there by definition, at least by commercial lending standards, you're high risk. And then that forces you into a lender that doesn't have the same risk analysis as a commercial lender because I got a government backing. But does that not artificially
Are you asking whether having a lender with a government backing doesn't stimulate too much production?
Does it perhaps make it more difficult on people who
actually save their money?
Might otherwise have enough working capital if the profit margin is there.
Well, there's an interesting question, Dr. Pete. Does the government guarantees not stimulate overproduction and thus wreak havoc on
government guarantees that you're talking about are for commodity crops? That when you're talking about overproduction, you're talking about soybeans, wheat, barley, those kinds of crops.
I bet Tom's talking about strawberries.
Well, strawberries is not a commodity. That's a product like vegetables.
So I won't use the term commodity. I'll use strawberries, vegetables, grapes, whatever it is that we grow on the Central Coast. What is it that you can grow on the Central Coast today that isn't in a supply exceed condition to begin with?
And overproduced, right?
Yeah.
Is there something that isn't?
First of all, strawberries are not overproduced.
Well,
there's a market for every strawberry grown so far.
Yes, but is the market such that all of the farmers can make enough money so that they can set aside enough money for the next year without having to borrow money?
No, due to the nature of the way that we farm, they need the money to be able to do their operation.
Okay.
That's a 2 or 3 acre farmer who's growing organically, as an example, who sells at the farmer's market, can save enough money and do enough to do a subsistence type of farming. But you get into a farm that is commercially selling their products. In other words, they're more than just doing it on the weekends.
Okay.
Well, I'm hearing music here. So
we'll pick it up when we come back from this break. Hang on, folks. We have a few minutes left. This is The Food Chain. Michael Olson right back. Well, can we survive if the government doesn't have enough money to back agriculture with loan guarantees? Tom has a really interesting question. Tom, may I try to paraphrase and see if I
sure.
can get there?
If
the government guarantees loans to farmers, then it will be so easy for too many farmers to grow crops, and the crops they will produce too many crops, and the value of the crop will then decline to the point where very few farmers can make enough money to save the money for next year. So they are forced then to go back to that same loan guarantee program. Is that kind of what you're talking about?
The gist of it is do we artificially increase production supply when we have an artificial credit line system like that?
Pete?
Yeah.
No, I don't think so. I don't think that is the case. I think that you have to look at the cost of doing business in generally. I mean, there's such a difference between what the guy does that grows and sells to the farmer's market and the people that's in the business of agriculture.
Right, but isn't it the principle the same, though? If you're making it easy to get money, then so many people will start growing.
You don't make it easy to get money. You make money available for people who are responsible operators who do get money. There is a difference.
Mm-hmm.
We don't just give money out. As I told you earlier, we make sure that the person can repay the loan.
Right.
But if there's no money available, you're drying up that industry. It's basically the same thing as any other business.
Well, let's go from here to the future. Tom, let me ask you this. You're in agriculture. Where do you see all this shaking out, this government money business?
Well, I think my view of it is that there's still quite a bit of consolidation's got to take place, I think, in terms of many of the main crops that would grow on the coast, particularly like strawberries. I would expect that
probably around the country too. You could probably say the same thing about wheat in the Midwest.
Yeah, yeah. So, I'm not sure. Yeah, just more consolidation. So then you got less growers and larger growers, and it's more integrated with the shipping and marketing side as well.
Okay, very, very good. Thank you very much for the call, Tom. Really appreciate it. Dr. Pete, where are we going from here?
Well, I think he made a point there that what's happening is that if the money isn't available to the smaller grower, that exactly what he said is happening. It's going into corporation buying and changing the whole nature of agriculture.
And that, I think, was the headline in today's Wall Street Journal. Big companies that have access to credit are doing fine. Small companies with no access to credit are withering up. Ciara, thank you so much for joining us today. What do you see happening in the future of Guadalajara and agriculture in Mexico?
Well, for the small farmers, it's very difficult because, for example, we don't have a very well-designed program to support them, I mean, for the government. And basically, they don't have access to loans. They depend on money, but on their own. I mean, so.
Okay, here's what you and I will do. We'll translate Metro Farm into Spanish, and we'll raise hell with those big farmers.
Okay, that sounds good.
Dr. Pete Graff, thank you so much for joining us. 210 Saturdays is way too long, so let's do it again sooner. This has been The Food Chain. We've been talking about money and agriculture. What do you think out there? If farmers do not get enough money to grow crops, will we get enough food to eat? Join us on the forums at metrofarm.com and stay tuned next week for more What's Eating What Radio. Remember, cheap food isn't. Thank you so much.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now, go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.